gorgeous and a perfect entry for this message. So good morning. Welcome again to the West Valley Center for Spiritual Living. I'm still Reverend Karen Rice, and I'm really happy to be here today with a message that I'm excited to deliver. And actually, I have been waiting all week for this moment to tell you, you are magnificent. All I can think about all week was I just want to stand up there and shout it out. So really great choice of music. I must say I was so amused that when you were doing the happy song, baby wasn't so happy. That just made me laugh. And then when you got up here to do the next song, it was like she took one look at you guys up here and went, and oh no, I am still not wanting. What is that? What is that? She actually looks like she's at that age where the separation anxiety is prime. So, yeah. Well, welcome. I'm really pleased to be delivering a message that is aligned to a larger message that Centers for Spiritual Living all around the world are following these monthly themes. And so in hundreds of centers, there are thousands of listeners who are hearing this idea that really you are magnificent. And it's, you know, I don't think we can say it enough. When I listen to the lyrics in that song that was just delivered so beautifully to us, we can feel something inside of us that wants to respond at a level like, yeah, convince me, really, I want to believe it. But how do we get there? And I would say that this philosophy that was created by an amazing brilliant man who never wanted to be up on such a pedestal as I personally have him. I have been accused of being Ernest Holmes fundamentalist, and I'm not ashamed of it. But Ernest Holmes, who really looked for that truth in all spiritual traditions, had this great way of articulating how magnificent we truly are. And what it boils down to is that there is a way for us to examine our relationship to the divine. There is a way for us to pause and take a breath and recognize the presence and the power of God right where we are, no matter what, and to realize that we are actually one with that amazing infinite intelligence, and that there really is no way that we can be separated from it. And that's what we aim to teach in everything that we do. And we do offer lots of classes. There's always some great educational activity going on around here, because it is indeed what we are born of. Ernest Holmes used to say, we are a teaching organization, not a preaching, not a proselytizing group of people. I know, it is rather nice, right? Having dabbled in the other side, I can say my life is a lot easier that I don't have to burden myself with making sure everybody sees the light. Because what I know is that light is already in you, and you will awaken to it, and it doesn't have to be in the walls of a church or a sanctuary or a temple. That most of us will be just as lit up about the truth of God and our being in that divine reality as we walk through a park, or I can walk around my block and see things in nature. And so we have this great gift to recognize that what we do in this teaching is, and part of the Global Heart Statement states, that we are helping people to recognize their spiritual magnificence. Pretty good stuff. Pretty good stuff. We have envisioned ourselves as an organization to sort of be in that place of continually cultivating a flow of that kind of divine inspiration or realization, that we can be inspired to continue continually, forever and ever, no matter how old we get, that we can be inspired to always desire to enhance what we know and to sort of evolve ourselves along this spiritual idea, the spiritual wisdom that permeates absolutely everything, including ourselves. So as I have been listening to ministers, and as I do my own personal study and read the thoughts of other great thinkers, And listen to, even on our ministers' listserv, the conversations among the CSL ministers. What I see is, what it feels like to me is we're developing an increasingly comfortable style of talking about that idea of oneness. What that means when we talk about oneness or wholeness, that perfection that Mark was referencing in his reading, that there is a way of being able to articulate these greater truths that have been rather mystical and from the ancient teachings and difficult to wrap our minds around. And I'm happy that we're getting more clarity and it's getting more common even outside the idea of new thought, where science and spirituality are merging. And we're seeing that great connection and understanding that idea of oneness in a different way. And certainly, that idea of oneness is sort of a classical element of the teachings of the science of mind. It is that idea that we are all just given the idea that we are born into human form, that we are divinely imbued with all this amazing DNA. If you could see that, I always think of what would that look like? You know, if you had a microscope that could look at that kind of, to see and recognize and name that distinct God stuff inside of us. So we are naturally in this place of desiring to have conversations. And I was thinking, I wrote a poem years ago. I was still in seminary, and I wrote this poem about wanting and unwanting, that we become one with and then we forget again, and then we're sort of unone. And so I decided, as I was making this material in a language I could articulate, that I think it's about conscious wanting. You know, it's so that we intend to remember that we are one with all of life and with spirit itself. So Holmes would say, and other New Thought teachers would say, I live and move and have my being in spirit itself. And there's no way that can't be active and happening all the time. So I would say that the full power of the Holy Spirit is in you right now. And you are magnificent, and there is no way you cannot be. Even if, yes, amen. Even if you're not in a great mood, or if you're feeling a little bit off or a little under the weather, it doesn't matter. That magnificence still absolutely shines inside of you. So of course we're magnificent. We are an extension of our mind is an extension of God's mind. So we'd have to be. And in that truth, boy, all things are possible. Anything can unfold in all kinds of ways. Jesus said, and seem to know, the Father and I are one. So that's what we want to look at. That's what I want to talk to today. And I found this great quotation that's taken from a fabulous lecture that Ernest Holmes gave in 1959. It was this summer retreat up at Asilomar on the Monterey coast in this great chapel. Raise your hand if you've ever been to the Asilomar retreat grounds. Wow, amazing, right? Who doesn't want to hang out there for a week? Oh, I was there when you were there once. And in the chapel, they have, it's a peaked chapel, and it's all glass and faces the sand dunes and the ocean. And Ernest Holmes stood there in 1959 and delivered his most famous lecture, and they call it the Sermon by the Sea. And you can go home and you can Google that. You can Google Sermon by the Sea, Ernest Holmes, Sermon by the Sea, and it'll pop up, and it's too long to read to you now, but it's so gorgeous, and it happened, really, it was only, that had to be in July or August, and he passed the next April, so it was one of the last great big things that he did, and it's well known, and he was kind of brazen in the way that he said, I believe that we have a message that can be the message that will shift the consciousness of humanity for a future, for global compassion. So when I think about statements like that, it excites me that now again, CSL is standing strong in this theme of the global vision. And our global vision states, as I've been saying weekly for a while. Our global vision states that we believe in a world that works for everyone. So not right now, it's not. You know, it doesn't look pretty out there all the time. But we believe it's possible. And not only that, but we believe by talking about it, by implanting it in the consciousness of other human beings, by our willingness to do our own work, that we then become that place where that vision can have a contagion. And when I just think about that and I add to it social media, man, something stirs inside of me that is a higher quality of excitement than things I had imagined were possible even 10 years ago. Even 10 years ago that we could see this coming, now what we see is the world is not what it used to be. I recently upgraded my smartphone, and I now have Facebook on my smartphone. I'm not sure that's a good thing. because it's really entertaining for me to click that little button and see all the things that you are all posting. And fortunately, my friends, those people whom I choose to friend on Facebook, don't post a lot of stuff I'm not interested in, but it's amazing to me. I don't know what the difference is between looking at Facebook on my computer and on my phone. I think it's just the ease with which you scroll. But like everything is video now. I'm totally blown away that it's everything is video. Every time I scroll up, we used our data like that, and we never ran out of data before. We had to upgrade our plan. But seriously, you can see in 20 seconds a delicious meal come into form, you know? It's just a whole new world for me. And what I'm noticing and what I'm really feeling is that right here in this room, I can't even tell you how many of you are posting the most beautiful acts of human kindness videos or quotations with beautiful artwork. Or the thing, the part that's really blowing my mind is all the adorable babies and the pets. And not only that, but stories of hope. And it's endless. It's endless. If I sit for 10 minutes and go as fast as I can and take it all in, and then you do have to stop to see some of those videos because they're great. What I see is the world is not the world it used to be. And all over, because I'm choosing who I friend, perhaps, but I don't think so, there is a reason these videos are going viral. Do you know what that means? To go viral means it's like mass amounts of people have selected and viewed these uplifting, gorgeous videos and delicious recipes. But they're going viral because we as humanity are hungry for it. And so this is all good news. No matter what we see going on that is the opposite of good news, I want to remind you that all of this is good news. So back to Ernest Holmes and his Sermon by the Sea. Ernest said in that talk that when we get together in community for an intention, much like the way we gather on a Sunday morning in temples and spiritual centers and churches all around, we get a clearer view of truth. We create a clarity in our togetherness. So it's like everybody brings their own little piece of light, but then we bring that together, and that's a lot of light. And so we sort of amplify each other in a way. So a little more glory, he says, is added to the glory that we already possess, because when we gather together with the intent of recognizing something more, power, the presence, that which is greater than we are, when we do that, we deepen in consciousness. And the consciousness of a group is far greater than the consciousness of the individual. And we all understand this in one way or another. So at the bottom line, he says, the advantage is that we gain a broader certainty of mind. We gain a broader certainty of mind. We have a higher perspective, and we can be more certain about what it is that we believe and what we hear and how we take it in and how we might use it and apply it and share it or whatever we do with it. And so that's what I want us to look at today. What are we certain about? And we got to start at the very beginning. What do you believe about that great creator, that spirit itself, that which created all things? And do we really spend time contemplating that idea that this it is a power and that it is also an indwelling presence of infinite intelligence? And that's why we can be imbued with this incredible infinite possibility. You are magnificent, and so am I, and so is every living being because of this great truth. Dr. Holmes said, our job is to hold fast to the conviction that there is a power, to discover that power, and then to use that power. And that's why we're so busy teaching classes all the time. That's what why we care about what Thomas Troyer, one of the greats that sparked something in Ernest Holmes. And that's why we need classes like Mark's own writing on his book, where he's inspired and to say things in his own way. We have to articulate these things again and again and again and look for the way it resonates for us, just in the way that a Sunday message can be delivered, and what you hear is going to be different than what this person over here hears. There is a gem for you today, I promise you. If you are open to it, you know, I always pray that hearts and minds will open, that we will soften, and that the little gem that is yours today will just fall in your lap and tickle your mind, and that you will take it home, and even if it's not something you like, you will question it, and you will ponder it, and you will work it over until you find what truth is there for you. So that's what we do, you know. We teach people about their spiritual magnificence. Isn't that magnificent? Absolutely. Yeah, right? And we are perfectly created, and we got that God stuff in us. And the other piece of the story that's so interesting to me is that we're all in choice. That we all really are sort of co-creators in our own life, and that we've been given this gorgeous God-given power to design our own life, because we learn, first off, we learn that we are living a life of choice. And that if you don't like the way your life looks, you can choose again. You can just go back and rethink all the things you've thought before and plant some new seeds, and just know that all that the Father has is given. Nothing is withheld from us. All of it is given. So I want to talk to this idea a moment about how we choose to select what we take. If all is given, how do we choose to line up to that piece that we might want for our own life? And I found a brand new to me. She's not new. In fact, she lived in the 19th century. No, she lived in the 1900s. That sounds so long ago now. But she's a metaphysician, a New Thought author and teacher that was on the East Coast in New York, probably contemporary to Holmes, although she lived a little longer than Holmes. Her name is Anna Lee Scarron. And I just stumbled on some of her stuff, and I couldn't read enough. It was just the way she spoke. The words are so, they just speak directly to my heart, and I feel action in her words. And I found this quote. Anna Lee said, "Lift your eyes to the glory of the divine and let God's power begin to be made manifest through you." Lift your eyes to the glory. Let God's power be made manifest to you. Become aware of it. Take the deep desire or the request of your soul into the center of your being and hold it there. As a cup is to be filled full, and it will assuredly be fulfilled. I like that idea of taking a cup like a cup and holding it to the center of your being. Because if I think of how simple it is to take a cup, if I'm thirsty and I want a beverage, I can take a cup and I can fill it up with whatever I want, right? And Ernest Holmes had that way. I like to say one of the first talks I ever gave, I called the Big Dipper, and it was where Holmes said, if you take a pint dipper to the well, you'll only be able to pull up a pint of water. So what you do is you have to make the dipper bigger. You have to stretch it out and build up the sides so you can take more if you want more. So there's that element of what we teach and what we do here, is that there's always that way we want to expand our thinking and stretch our minds. But the other thing that she made me think of is that if I go into all right, if I was at home and I went into my kitchen at home and grabbed a cup and I'm thirsty, I could fill my cup with water, I could fill my cup with coffee or tea, or I could fill my cup with wine. I could choose whatever I desire, and then when I sit down to drink whatever beverage I have poured into my cup, I'm going to get what I poured in my cup, right? The only time you drink water and expect it to be wine was if you were back there when he performed that first miracle. And apparently only because his mother made him. He was obedient to mom at some point. So we are like that. We are filling our cups. And sometimes I think we fill our cup with negativity, you know, or we feel like other people are filling our cup with stuff that we don't really want in our cup of life. So I want to say and remind us that we're really not victims in any of this. The beauty of this philosophy is it gives us the freedom, and the truth will set you free. So we focus on the truth, and we focus on the desire. We focus on the quality, the divine quality of that which we would like to be filled up with. So our job then is to become that receptacle, to become that container, and to build up our edges. And that's what spiritual practice does. That's what education does, taking classes and reading books and associating with like-minded people. I wanted to throw in a story because my talk was just like that for the whole talk. And I went, well, you need a story. And I went to my Alan Cohen book because Alan Cohen is great for stories. And I opened the book, and it was a Super Bowl story. So I went, that's it. I don't care what his moral of the story was. I'm going to twist it and make it fit with my message this morning because it was too good to pass up. Alan Cohen is an author and a speaker as well. Good. I am personally in awe of this gentle, amazing human being. I went to a lecture many years ago, and it was while I was sitting in a large auditorium, and he had completed the lecture, and he said, are there any questions or comments from the audience? And I had one of those moments, has this ever happened to you, where I went like this, and I went, oh, my God, that's my hand. And then it's too late, he calls on you, you know? And so I just shared whatever came to mind, and it was very clear to me that ministry was in my future. So he didn't say that, but what happened for me, so I'm very fond of this person. He's very special to me. So Alan Cohen tells this story. He was spending some time on the beach in Maui, and he saw that there was a person with a metal detector. And so he's watching this guy with his metal detector, and now Alan Cohen, who's a self-proclaimed, deeply spiritual person who's also really very down-to-earth and real, he realized he had some judgments. He was thinking, now, what good is that? Somebody's out there looking for treasure when somebody else had a loss. In order to find a treasure, somebody else had to have a loss, and I just don't think that's right. But Alan Cohen, being kind of evolved, decided, well, wait a minute, that's a judgment. And I know how to get over my judgments of other people. I'm going to go meet the man and have a little conversation with him. See, that helps me. When I'm having a disconnect with, it, especially if it's a stranger, it doesn't matter, anybody, I guess, but I notice with strangers, if I make eye contact, I can no longer stand my judgment. Just eye contact, right? It's connecting. It's just about connecting. So Alan Cohen goes over and he meets Tom, and they introduce each other, and Tom is having a good time, and Alan says to Tom, so what kind of things do you find? And he goes, well, I found a lot of watches through the years, and oh, I found a lot of coins. I get coins all the time, and I found a couple of things that were kind of valuable. And so Alan goes, well, like, tell me what the most valuable thing you ever found was. And Tom lit up, and he said, one time I found a Super Bowl ring in the sand. And he went, a Super Bowl ring? And he went, yeah, it was a player's ring from 1969. You know, that was the year that Joe Namath and the New York Jets, that's right, I knew somebody would know, they beat the Colts, the Baltimore. Are you itching to get home? And the odds were really against him, and they won the game. So Alan says to Tom, what'd you do with the ring? Did you keep it? He goes, oh, no, I didn't keep it. I went home and I found the administrative offices for the Jets, and I let them know that I had this ring, and they asked me what the initials were inside the ring, and I told them, and sure enough, they knew exactly who it belonged to, and he had lost it 1 year after he won it, so he'd only worn it a year, and he lost it, he had taken a vacation to Maui, and he lost it while he was swimming in the ocean. And the ocean pushed it up on shore. It had been buried in the sand for 29 years until Tom found it. So the Jets get all excited, and they go, this is going to be a great PR event. So they call the press, and they fly out Tom and his wife, and they get the player and his wife there, and they plan this big event, and Tom gets to give the ring back to the player, who, can you imagine how excited he was to get his ring back? And then the football player, who is unnamed in the story, says to Tom, I suppose you're expecting a reward. And Tom says, well, no, actually, I don't need a reward. He said, you know, I know that I'm really blessed every day just to be able to walk on the beach and see the sunset and to feel the beauty of nature. I have all the reward I need. And so the football player's wife was standing right there, and she said, well, what a beautiful expression. However, we have a connection with the airlines, and so this is what we've done for you. For the rest of your life, you and your wife will have a first-class airline ticket to anywhere in the world you want to go on us. And so they received that, and everybody had a good experience from it. Now, I think that this story is a really beautiful example of what happens when you're living your life on purpose, which it seems that Tom was. Circumstances in his life allowed him to find this great life where he could have the beach and he appreciated nature. Notice that also in the story was this great thanksgiving, you know, that he really did appreciate where he was and how he lived his life, and he even expressed it as, that's the greatest reward I could ever receive. But do you see how our values, our ethics, our own personal integrity and living aligned to that personal integrity create such a relationship between us and all of life that we learn that it is indeed a reciprocal universe. So as we give out, even in our attitude and in our beliefs, that is also how we receive back. So it's not a story about being a good person. I want you to really hear that. This is not a story about being a good person and doing the right thing, but it's a story for me about living a good life and living that life aligned to your values and your integrity, and then there's no question as to what the right thing to do is if you get in a corner where you have to make a decision as such. Ernest Holmes said that, and this is a fitting, it's an affirmation actually, and by the way, all of his books are packed full of beautiful, beautiful affirmations. Listen to this one, I think it fits the story nicely. The living Spirit Almighty is that which animates everything I do, say, or think, and therefore, I am continuously directed. I am compelled to do the right thing and follow the right course at all times. You know, that's not to do the right thing and be honest. That's to do the right thing, that there is a right pattern for our lives. That's why when you take the foundation class, you start to manifest parking spaces and green lights and things, because it gives you a sense of, wait, there's a rhythm of life, and as I don't resist life, as I don't head off to the shopping center begrudging how awful I hate the parking situation, if I can just change my attitude, there will be a reciprocal reaction, a response from life itself that will make that process easier. And obviously, it's easier when we just lighten our own attitude about things. But these are great words. And then I have one more that I paraphrased because it was really long and I wanted to give you the gist of it, because I love to paraphrase, period. I just really like to paraphrase. But because I see a formula in it, and you know that happens to me all the time. I see formulas in everything I read, not just Holmes. Holmes says, Do you want to live this life and practice this philosophy? Then believe in divine guidance. Affirm that your mind is continuously divinely imprinted or impressed upon. You know, that something divine is always imprinting in your mind with images of good, with images of right action. Affirm that everything in your life is controlled by love, harmony, and peace, because there is an eternal energy that is animating everything you do. See, affirm love and peace and beauty and goodness, because that's an energetic thing that's in the universe, and there's going to be a reaction to that. It animates everything you do. Feel it, he says. Sense it. That same divine energy runs through all of life, through all people, through all activities, through every situation we encounter, every condition that concerns us, every person we love, and even those that we don't love. So, that's true. Somebody pass me a program. Let me see your program, Janice. So I found this quote, and again, I paraphrased it, so you're not going to find it quite like that. But it comes from page 167 in the Science of Mind textbook, and that quote ends with this sentence that is now on the front of your program, because I think it's so important. The greatest good you can conceive should be affirmed as part of your daily experience. And so it is, man. That's a good one. All right. So the consciousness that I bring to anything I do is going to be reflected back at me, and it's really that simple. Do unto others as you would like to have it done to you. And what I get really excited about here is that this is our philosophy. This is what we are born of. It is inevitable that we should wake up and recognize how magnificently we are already created and how life is just giving to us all the time, and that we can really then take a stand for global compassion. And I get so excited just saying that each week when I have an opportunity to. See, here's what I notice. In my own life, and you're not that much different than me, I'm just short and married to a biker dude, but... I know you want him, Dorothy. He's mine, baby. Watch out. Here's what I notice in my own life. When I get overwhelmed by world events, when I get concerned about the poverty I see in the world, when I get upset about the wars, and when I get very upset about terrorism and all of those things, I never feel good. And I never feel kind. And I don't feel very forgiving.